Hey, all you Shadowrun heads out there, welcome back to another edition of Shadow Running on Empty, where we're bringing you the lore of the Six Worlds straight to your wonderful ear holes. I am So Easy Mode, the lore guy, either, both, who knows? I don't. We're just bringing you information that you want to hear about the Sixth World. Tonight, I am joined by my usual co-host, Austin. Austin, how are you doing this evening?
My ear holes are ready to be engorged by Lore Guy.
I'm feeling ways about that.
As you should. And remember that you did this to yourself.
I really set myself up for that one, didn't I? Just walked face first right into it. Comedy gold, everyone. Feel free to share your jokes at my expense in our Discord.
We have never on this podcast once made a joke at your expense. How dare you?
Never.
Never once.
Never ever once has it happened.
Do not at Easy in the Discord and give him examples of any time in which you think a joke was made at his expense, because the egg will be on your face.
This is true.
As there's none to find.
Dun dun dun. Well, I know you're eager for more Sixth World lore, as are our listeners. That's why you guys keep coming back, and I appreciate it, trying to give you the information. And since one of our last ones that we did, or at least one of the more recent pods that was released, was about a shadowy organization, guess what we're doing tonight?
It's definitely not another shadowy organization. That would be insane.
What? But there's so many to choose from, and we have to get to all of them eventually. So, yes, it's another shadowy organization.
Well, I'm sure that they'll do nothing wrong. Who's up tonight?
Oh boy. Well, you'll get to be the judge of the wrongdoings that they're going to be committing. Tonight's docket for shadowy organizations, we're going to be looking at the group known as Winter Night.
Oh no, I was wrong.
Brace yourselves. This gets... I don't know if I should put like trigger warnings ahead here. There's some dark stuff we're about to talk about.
I mean, Easy, let's be fair. There's a trigger warning implied with every episode that we do at this point for this podcast, because everybody does bad things.
That's fair. There's somebody that's making someone feel the bads at some time. So, Winter Night. Man, where to start with these guys?
Probably at the beginning.
Well, that would make the most sense. But what is the beginning?
Probably how they came into existence.
That just makes way too much sense.
I'm sorry, I'm not trying to do your job here. Please continue.
No, please. Let me know how they started. So, I guess the first place to start is, how up to date are you on your Norse or Scandinavian mythology?
Oh, I mean, it was a minor of mine for the two semesters that I went to college, but for those of us unfamiliar, Easy, why don't you go ahead and introduce them into it?
Well, I'm sure most people will be aware of some Norse mythology if you're into the Marvel Cinematic Universe at all. You have seen Asgard and Thor and Loki. and Odin and Hela. So you have the names, right? Not necessarily the exact stories.
Mm-hmm. Context, as it were.
Yes, context. I mean, the names are all still the same because mythology, that's how you have to connect things. But the big thing that you have to take away, especially when we're going to be talking about Winter Night, is their obsession with the end of the world. And they believe in Ragnarok. And for the uninitiated in the Scandinavian mythos, Ragnarok is, of course, an end of the world mythology where a gigantic battle takes place on what is called Midgard, which is basically Earth, where you have the gods have come down to fight the legions of basically hell and the giants, the Jotun. Everything all converges on Earth, and there's a giant titanic battle that takes place where nearly everyone is killed or wiped out. But those that survive will go on to create this new utopia. Because, of course, that's how it works, right?
Yep. From the ashes rises, yes, something better.
Yes, Winter Night believes in Ragnarok, the world-spanning battle that will destroy the old. Thanks to bloodthirsty Norse gods, and will usher in a new era of peace.
So far, so good. How could this possibly go wrong?
Well, the Winter Night organization gives this a little twist in that they believe that by helping to bring about Ragnarok, they are earning their place in the pantheon of the Norse gods who will once again rule the earth.
For any of our people who may be code listeners between Sinless and Shadow Running on Empty, I would just like to state before we go further, that the Valkyries are in no way affiliated with Winter Night in any way, shape, or context.
Neither is Loki, to the best of our knowledge.
To the best of our knowledge is 100% an accurate way to put that.
I feel it's a very accurate way to say it. So to accomplish its ends, Winter Night uses a network rivaling Lothwear's in size and power to stockpile nukes. That's right. You heard me right. They're trying to stockpile nuclear weapons. They also are trying to collect and create unique magic items and commit carefully planned atrocities among their other activities.
I mean, there's nothing better to do with nukes than stockpile them, some would say.
Well, they plan on using them, not just stockpiling them.
Oh, well, I guess that's the second best thing you could do with nukes, arguably, behind stockpiling them.
Yes, to achieve their goal of global destruction. They are absolutely ruthless, relentless, shameless, and unfortunately quite clever. As the only thing that they want from those that are outside their organization is death. They want everyone else's death so they can bring about the prophesized end of the world. To best give this more meat and understanding, it's probably best to look through the eyes of one of their operatives that they had brought into the fold. And this is from the perspective of one Brigadier General Lucius Harding.
Good villain name.
It is a good villain name, right? So originally, this is back in the early 2050s, 2055, right? There is an intelligence analysis that crosses Harding's desk. stating that a small toy manufacturer in Toronto had received a small shipment of nuclear material. That sounds ridiculous, right?
Well, it is until you start to think about the prospects of, you know, utonium in a box. It is a number one seller for Christmas this year.
Everybody wants to build their homemade nuke, right?
Turn the crank until surprise, radiation poisoning. Woo! Fun for Woo-hoo! The whole family.
It's like Jack in the Box that ruins your entire block. Well, the general takes it seriously and dispatches agents to watch the place. If nuclear material is being moved about in the UCOS, obviously they need to know about it so that they can put a stop to it.
That sounds reasonable. Mm-hmm.
After months of fruitless watching, several pounds of nuclear material arrive hidden in a shipment of plastic resin.
But who was watching the vegetables, Easy?
I don't know.
I'm sorry.
Veggie Tales? Is that who we're watching?
I'm sorry. That joke was low-hanging fruit. I couldn't help myself.
Sometimes you got to just pluck it, right?
It's just pluck it out, man.
Yeah, you just pull it right out of the ground.
Some would say that it was ripe for the taking. All right, anyway, okay, back okay, onto the okay, conversation. Okay. All right, anyway, we're getting off course here.
Anyway, the material itself, God, the material itself was traced back to a warehouse in Nairobi, Kenya, which was burned down 2 days after the address was confirmed. So before they could even get anybody over there to investigate, an agent to investigate, the entire warehouse is burned to the ground.
Now, look, I'm no insurance agent, all right? But that sounds pretty suspicious.
Well, it gets worse. This material that they're tracking from the toy store eventually ends up going to other locations. From New England to New York to Philly to Boston. Continues to go and go. The final shipment was labeled as a state-of-the-art Tridio set with all the accessories, and that ended up at a private house.
Well, they've got to have plutonium-powered surround sound. Otherwise, how are they going to get the true cinema experience?
It's the only way to get ultra-high def.
Yeah.
It's nuclear material.
Dolby irradiated is the purest form of audio, Easy.
The only thing about this private residence that was out of the ordinary is as the resident who lived there had no criminal record, had no record of being involved in any political movement, and nothing that was found when the data mining was done about this individual proved to be fake. All of it seemed on the up and up, on the level, right?
Mm-hmm.
The only odd thing about the house or the inhabitant in the house was the heavy magical shielding around the building.
I mean, that could be for any myriad of reasons, though.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not just because they don't want anybody being able to astrally peer into seeing what's happening there.
Of course. Well, eventually, they have to make a move to go inside, and they find a passageway that leads into a coal mine. As they descend into the coal mine, in an air shaft halfway down a disused passageway, almost entirely blocked by rubble from a collapse, the team discovered 8 nuclear weapons that were covered with magical inscriptions and inlaid with auric alkum.
Magic nukes? All right. Okay. Intriguing.
Just going to let that sink in.
Yeah. Okay.
Magic nukes inlaid with auric alkum.
Now, Orichalcum's supposed to be like the rarest material in the sixth world, right?
It's a very rare magical substance. It is
Okay.
used in some magical rituals. It's great if you have it to use to create foci.
I see. Okay. Is it just that I know that we've covered this before, but I feel like it's been a while. Is it just like a super like adaptive magical conduit material, basically? Like it's just really good at focusing and channeling magic through it?
Yes, it is
Okay.
one of the few metals that is found in the sixth world that can harness magical energy or be
Gotcha.
used in the creation of magical items.
Right. Okay. So putting it on nukes that are also inscribed with magical runes
Yes.
would say, I don't know, maybe increase the potency of the payload in some way.
Very well could.
Probably.
Very well could. It would definitely have some kind of effect on the manosphere in the area as well.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that.
Definitely. Sounds really bad, right?
Yeah, not great. Probably not a great outcome. As you would imagine, that just comes from launching a nuke normally.
Right? Well, this team ends up arresting 58 suspects. 51 knew nothing about nuclear material or weapons. They were just paid to take packages from point A to point B.
Those other seven.
This other the remaining seven committed suicide under questioning.
So they were probably innocent.
Yes. Yeah, because when you're innocent and you have nothing to hide, you could have just said, oh, I just carry a package from point A to point B and I get paid like a month's salary to do so. Instead, you kill yourself. Well, it gets weirder for the general after that, unfortunately.
He
In
was 2 days away from retirement, too.
well, 3 days after they make these arrests, and these seven members are unalived, right? In Cincinnati, on a routine inspection, the general wakes up to find himself tied to his bed in his hotel room. Four men are in the room, one of them bending over, and they put a chip into his data jack. As soon as the chip is placed in his data jack, this is the quoted experience. Absolute power, absolute certainty. Swinging a gleaming axe at the heads of my enemies, they died in fountains of blood. I laughed. My friends laughed with me. Laughed and danced and drank. We still lived. We were the chosen. We would live forever and ever. Then suddenly the chip is gone. Once the chip is removed, the general is quoted, I fell from heaven, plunged into the depths of the inferno, cold, empty, desolate. Someone was whimpering like a whipped dog, blubbering the word please over and over until the sound died away into sobbing. When my eyes started burning, I realized the one whimpering was me. That gives a great example of what immediate chip withdrawal can feel like.
So overall, not a great experience is what
Well,
I'm hearing.
he was just forcibly slotted a beetle,
Yeah.
and then it was taken away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not great.
So
That's a little rough.
the guy that gives him the chip is described as being slender, well-dressed, with smooth dark hair and gold-rimmed glasses.
At least we have fashionable villains in Shadowrun pretty consistently,
you have to have
know?
fashionable villains. I feel like that's a must, right?
Yeah.
So he offers the general a deal after giving him the taste of this chip. The general's quoted again at saying is when he talked, meaning the man that with the gold rimmed glasses, I heard the flutter of bird's wings. His shadow on the wall looked like a raven. His hair was just the color of raven's feathers. And this is where the general learns about Winter Knight and their goal to destroy the world. Winter Knight believes the awakening has made the world ready for the god's advent. All that remains is the final act of preparation and the creation of Ragnarok, where every living thing must die in battle.
By battle, they mean magically infused nuclear weaponry.
Well, they would create, a giant... the potential to create a global war as well while creating a global nuclear winter.
Right.
And this is also that Winter Knight's elite can use the overwhelming power of the sacrifice life force to transform the world into their version of Midgar and themselves into gods.
Also, as a note in regards to the Scandinavian lore aspect of it that I feel like we did not mention, one of the precursors to Ragnarok is called Fimbulwinter, which is the eternal winter, which is basically where the entirety of Midgar is covered in a winter that lasts until Surtur rises and returns the heat to the world, which is the inciting incident of Ragnarok. And
correct.
So the name of Winter Knight is a reference to Fimbulwinter being the precursor to their Ragnarok that they're trying to create.
And what better way to bring it about than nuclear winter?
It is the most efficient winter. I will give them that. Like, if you're gonna pick a winter to get behind, nuclear winter's a pretty good one to go with.
So at this point, they're basically trying to bribe this general into joining Winter Knight. And they're bribing him with the chip, which is then later referred to as the God Chip.
That's pretty good.
That's what it's called. It's called the God Chip.
Oh, they should have called it the Gallarhorn.
It actually does have a name, and we will get to its real name or what it's referred to here.
Okay.
But right now it's referred to as the God Chip.
Okay.
Whenever one of their followers does something good or does a really good job for the group, they would get sent a God Chip that has a self-destruct built into it. So it's just enough for one dose, and then it burns out.
I see.
And they promise that every time they accomplish something or a goal or a task that's needed to be done for the group, they'll get the God Chip. And now this is where it gets a little dark.
What? Now it gets dark? All right.
Well, so the general does stuff for Winter Knight for a while. It's blurry as to how long he aids them.
Does the God Chip also serve as like an indoctrination chip as well? Is that like the other purpose of it?
A little bit. I mean, it's giving you the feeling of what it would be like to be a god of Valhalla.
Yeah, the Golden Halls. Yeah, you're entering the Golden Halls. Yeah.
So, of course, that's going to feel amazing.
Right.
You know? It's a beetle, obviously.
Yeah.
You feel better than life after you get that hit. As they say on the street, the first one's always free.
Always free.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit here. But unfortunately, Brigadier General Lucius Harding kills his own family, bomb the Pentagon.
That's a busy day.
Yeah, well, he's driven to this because at one point he decides to try and fight against the Beatle addiction because his family is starting to notice that he's addicted to something. And so he smashes the two drones that he was given that are used to contact him. And the way that Winter Knight goes about the punishment for this is, oh boy. I hope you're sitting down.
Well, I was standing, but I guess I will now. Okay,
it's probably a good idea to sit down for this one.
All right.
So once he gets rid of the drone, so he can't be contacted or contact other members like he's supposed to, right? He's basically kind of giving in, going, they can come take me. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. But they don't. His daughter goes missing.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't come home from school. No word, no call, nothing. His wife eventually calls the police, and the general decides to go out and try and look himself, right? Well, as soon as he leaves, something kicks off or clicks in his head that forces him to go to a predetermined location.
Mm-hmm.
And once he gets there, he says on his way, his vision is blurred. He doesn't really understand what's happening. Eventually, when he gets there, he's standing in a strange hotel room. And someone's standing behind him and holding his arms while his daughter's body was lying on the bed.
Mm.
Blood-soaked sheets.
That's not good.
No. On the dresser were two new messenger drones. And the voice behind him told him to pick them up. And of course, his friend from the previous time that he was originally contacted, the man with the gold-rimmed glasses and the chip, said that his daughter's death was punishment for disobedience. If they betrayed them again, Winter Knight would arrange horrible accidents for the rest of his family. They spared his life only because he was still useful to them. And if he ceased to be useful, then his son would be next. Then his other daughter. Then his other son. Then his newborn child. And then his wife. And they told him in painstaking graphic detail what they had planned. So yeah, that's why it gets dark. And instead of the general following through and continuing to help them, he takes the evening, shoots them all, meaning his family, then drives to work at the Pentagon, where he has rigged several kilos of C-12 plastique, which will destroy the terminal he's working at and himself, which he does. That's why he is better known for the general that went crazy because of his addiction problem and killed his family and then bombed the Pentagon. But according to his recollection and detail and release to Shadowlands before the explosion, it was this group Winter Knight, and he was coerced into doing it through addiction.
Jesus.
Yeah. Pretty crazy, right?
Yeah, that's just not great. Not great all the way down.
No. Not great at all.
I mean, if the him killing his family thing, I'm assuming, was in relation to figuring that Winter Knight was going to get to them anyway, regardless, why did he also bomb the Pentagon?
It was set up to destroy all the files and everything that he had.
I see.
He just went really overboard so that literally nothing could be salvaged.
Gotcha.
So he sends the information out to Shadowlands first.
Okay.
And then as soon as that's done, that's when the explosive triggers and blows up his whole portion of the office. So yes, Winter Night, kind of dark.
I've never heard that about any shadowy organization in Shadowrun before.
Never, ever.
This is the first time, and I am shocked, Easy. Shocked.
So, Winter Night, here's how their organization kind of works. They are organized into cells, and each cell consists of 3 to 20 members. Only the cell leaders may initiate contact with one another and with cell members. And they do so through message drones, which are typically small, commercially available types. So like the remote control drones that you could buy today is what they use to communicate.
Okay.
They are constantly recruiting new talent, using tactics ranging from simple bribery and offers of camaraderie to extortion, threats, blackmail, and fiendishly subtle psycho plots.
So your usual run-of-the-mill clandestine Shadowrun group at this point.
Right?
So far, lines up.
Cell members can range from highly placed individuals in corporate organizations to street-level punks. Larger cells serve as strike teams used to destroy both hard and soft targets or just cause trouble in general. The makeup of these cells often resembles a shadow-running team or small mercenary group.
Mm-hmm.
They include groups like this generally include at least one toxic wolf shaman.
Oof.
Right? Because you have to represent Fenrir.
Fair. I suppose that's fair. And, I mean, a toxic shaman does line up with, you know, the whole wanting to burn the world down and destroy everything MO in and of itself. So, yeah, that checks out.
Exactly. For these larger groups, except for the cell leader, members of the teams almost never know they are working for Winter Night. Smaller covert cells specialize in disguising accidents, poisonings, and other subtle methods of elimination as random violence, suicides, or the actions of other groups. Much of Winter Night's equipment is built without serial or registration numbers on standard assembly lines, then classified as overruns and shipped to dummy companies where the cells can retrieve the equipment as needed. Winter Night maintains hundreds of these impromptu arsenals all over the world. Winter Night obtains its message and combat drones, vital to all its operations, from the same types of sources. This is the one interesting thing that sets them apart a little bit. Winter Night refuses to use the Matrix.
Okay.
Convinced, and here's the reasoning, this is so great, and fits with them perfectly. Convinced that the worldwide communications network is the design of Loki.
Not to be mistaken.
Again, not to be mistaken with Loki from The Sinless Show.
Yes.
But Loki, the Norse god, yes, of mischief.
I see.
Winter Night views the Matrix as a great enemy, a deceiver, and a spy.
I mean, I get it. They're not far off. Also, like, to be fair, you know, if you're running a clandestine organization whose overall goal is nuclear winter, not having a trail that's able to be traced back to you via the Matrix is probably a smart call.
A very smart call.
Yeah, not having any type of online presence as to your actions or deeds is probably a pretty good move.
You would think so, right? I mean, you only communicate through drones and probably dead drops.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. I know that we said it when we talked about the last shadowy organization as well, but I gotta give it to them. You know, Winter Knights kind of got their shit together, man.
Well, when you're trying to bring about the, end of the world, you gotta have a plan in place.
Well, you would think, right? But I mean, their execution kind of makes a lot of sense. They do a lot of things where you're like, yeah, that's the way to do that. Yeah, that's the way that that works. Yeah, okay, this all tracks. In an unfortunately, evil plotting way.
Right. Oh God. So the cells of Winter Knight are designing and building the tools Winter Knight will use to bring about their Armageddon. Their first priority is to construct and or steal nuclear weapons, followed by mystical research into making these bombs into weapon foci.
Ah, there it is.
There it is.
There we go.
That's what most magicians that are in Winter Knight are there to do.
They're the trigger.
Yeah, other tech cells concentrate their efforts on drilling mine shafts into geological faults all over the world and carving runes into the shifting plates to ensure that the transformation of the world is complete. But wait, there's more. Winter Knight is also researching alternate weapons of destructions, such as cryogenic supercritical nuclear masses.
Woo!
Subatomic dimensional linkages. Necromantic transformation rituals.
Well, how else are they going to raise their army from the ashes of nuclear winter?
I was thinking they need to bring the Draugr, right? Exactly.
The Draugrs, yeah. So which mage is Hela? That's what I want to know, because one of them has to have the donation, the denotion, right?
Well, you think I'll get to the leaders here towards
Okay.
the end after we get
Fair, fair.
through all this. They also even had a plan for a crop virus that will cause huge fires to sweep the earth, bringing about a global winter without a single nuke.
So the weather machine from Superman 3?
Not necessarily. Think of it more as like if you're burning out a lot of the crops, you're throwing up all of the ash into the air to create kind of a shield, right? You're,
The blanket that'll
yeah.
naturally do that. I see.
Yeah,
Okay.
that's what you're going for. As long as
Gotcha.
well as creating kind of a global dust bowl as well. If you're burning all the crops and everything.
Right.
Winter Knight is aware that there are other powerful and secretive groups in the world, as well as mega corporations and governments. And those would be hostile to their plans because they don't want the world to end.
Understandable.
Winter Knight's survival in this shadowy war relies on the fact that no one can find them to stop them. To maintain the organization's secrecy, most members of Winter Knight carry suicide devices ranging from cranial bombs to poisons to summon spirits whose services include killing captured agents.
I mean, secrecy is key.
Yeah. How would that be, though? You're an operative of Winter Knight, and you probably don't know it, but there's a spirit that is following you around wherever you go, and its one job is to kill you if you're captured.
Right. You get pulled over for like a speeding ticket, and you're just like, please don't take me in. Please don't take me in.
Yeah, so maybe those seven people didn't commit suicide but were killed by
Fair.
spirits.
Yeah. Very, very possible. Still not great.
No, still
But
not great.
possible.
So obviously, toxic shamans can be found amongst the ranks of the Winter Knight organization. And because they have such a mass base in the Norse mythology, obviously that means that raven and wolf shamans play a large role in their activities. The strongly necromantic cast of most of Winter Night's activities ensures that shamans affiliated with them will be twisted and toxic in the truest sense of the term.
Hey Chummer, just a quick aside. If you are enjoying the episode, be sure to rate it if on audio, or if you are on YouTube, give us a like and subscribe as we are trying to reach our 1,000 subs goal. You can also support us over on Patreon at patreon.com/critical_hits. Finally, if you are interested in taking your tabletop gaming to the next level, check out the episode description for an affiliate link to DriveThruRPG. So the next time you're looking to expand your library and want to help support us, drop that link in. And now, back to the show.
The Toxic Ravens are the driving influence behind the plot to remake the Earth. Their twisted rituals are nearly impossible for those of the Hermetic tradition to comprehend. Winter Night also heavily recruits toxic wolf shamans. Toxic Wolf is a blood-soaked berserker, fiercely committed to destruction and loyal to the goal Winter Night represents.
Again, checks out with our Lord of the Mythology. Yep, makes sense.
Yeah, unlike r raven shamans, wolf shamans willingly participate in battles and often provide magical support for strike cells. There are more ravens than wolves in Winter Night, but the wolves have a much higher profile and are more likely to be an active member in some of these cells where the ravens are much more secretive. Also, ravens that are shamans, not to be confused with the ravens that are in the Sinless Shell.
Yeah, once again, we
Distinct. It's weird the correlations that are popping up here. Are you guys sure you're not part of Winter Night?
Who knows? Who knows? At this point, I want to say no. I want to say no.
Winter Night is also one of the only organizations where they have brought more than one toxic shaman together, the raven and the wolf. Normally, toxic shamans don't play nice with each other.
Hey.
But for some reason, with this group, they do. Be it maybe a threat from something that's more powerful, or they are bribed, coerced, cajoled, promised something, or they just happen to work well with their toxic backgrounds and they want the same thing that Winter Night is working towards. That's most likely the logical pick. But that's not all.
Oh, it rarely is.
It rarely, rarely is. We have to talk about one of the tools that Winter Night gives to its strike cells that makes them even more deadly. Some strike cells are given this item that is called a Berserker chip. It is a fiendish variation of SimSense BTL chips. Normally, SimSense and BTL chips suppress the user's senses completely, replacing the input with information from the chip. In addition, the chips boost the user's ego, id, and glandular responses. Winter Night's special stripped-down version of the standard chip amplifies the id, ego, and endocrine responses, converts pain to pleasure, and establishes a strong feedback loop to the pleasure centers of the brain. In addition, the chip mutes all fear responses and often implants compulsions such as the desire to kill. Some versions of the Berserker chip may also contain skills allowing users with skill wires to use the chips as skill softs. How about that?
Seems not great.
Because the chip also dampens all pain signals, the user suffers no negative effects from the accumulation of physical damage or stun. Anyone using a Berserker chip will continue attacking until they've received so much damage that their body is just not usable.
Yeah, to mush, as it were.
Yes, they will keep going no matter what, as long as they can.
Well, you know, I mean, hey, blood for the blood god, skull for the skull thrones, am I right?
Yeah, pretty much. All the Berserker chips contain two self-destruct procedures. First, the chips are good for only one use. The act of using it burns it out, erasing the data from the chip and destroying the programming. Second, if the user dies while chipped, or if the chip is removed, a tiny thermite charge in the chip melts it into a blob of plastic. So nobody gets them.
Makes sense. The self-destruct sequence seems to be a favorite of Winter Knight when it comes to these types of things.
They are very big on maintaining their secrecy. Very, very big on it. Finally, the third thing that Winter Knight uses are their specialized drones. Winter Knight does make extensive use of drone vehicles. Small autonomous message drones provide the essential links between the various cells of the organization through a double-blind delivery system. The first cell programs the drone with several drop points and signals for each drop. The first cell ships the drones to the second cell, whose leader programs a second chip with the locations and signals of where messages are to be left on his end. Both chips are sealed into the machine, which will self-destruct if tampered with. Because of Winter Knight's aversion to the Matrix, it also uses message drones to send money between cells in the form of certified cred sticks. Courier drones will self-destruct if they are intercepted, tampered with, if a drone point is tampered with, or upon command by a rigger. When the goal would require a massive combat punch, drones equipped with heavy weapons represent the tool of choice, as Winter Knight considers a single rigger controlling several drones less of a security risk than a team of people. All Winter Knight drones are modified to contain several thermite charges set to destroy any part of the drone that could be traced back to the organization. In a combat situation, the drone controller must transmit a safe signal to the drones once each minute. If the drones do not receive this signal, they automatically go to Alpha Strike mode, which puts them beyond the rigger's control and immediately discharge all remaining ammunition at the nearest target and then self-destruct. The combat drones will also self-destruct if they run out of ammunition, they run out of fuel, or are disabled, or if they're tampered with between missions or upon receiving a signal from the rigger. There's so many ways for these things to explode.
Yeah, right.
The preferred armaments of the drone that Winter Knight likes are heavy machine guns, assault cannons, and missile launchers. If forced to apply extreme prejudice, Winter Knight attempts to eliminate all survivors and destroy as much property as they can to camouflage their actual goal of why they were there. Maximum carnage, maximum death. I mean, when you're already planning to destroy the world, I don't think that you're worried about any kind of collateral damage.
Yeah, right at that point.
Now we can talk about the ultimate high leadership, the ones that will attain the godhood once all the magic nukes are fired off, right? With such a large, spread out organization, you would expect what, a large leadership or a small leadership?
I would go with small leadership only because this type of the way that they handle things seems to be the less people directly involved, then the less likely it is for people to find out what they're doing. So I'm going to go with small leadership.
You are correct.
Aha! I've learned my shadowy organizations.
Yes, you have. So Winter Night was led by three people, and they are collectively known as the Norns.
Okay,
You have Wednesday. He is in Astru Priest and Toxic Idol Shaman. And for those wanting to know, and as a true, as a tr as the true is a religion which involves the worship of ancient Germanic and Scandinavian Viking spirits and gods.
I see.
Yes.
And Wednesday itself is named after the god Woden.
Yes. Wodan, also known as
Woden.
Odin.
Aha.
Oh, look at these connections we're making.
Look at what we're doing here. Who
Not
says that
only.
you can't learn anything from this podcast?
Yeah, not only are we going lore, but we're also talking mythology. Yay. So Wednesday actually led a small radical cult before meeting one of the other founding members of Winter Night. During Crash 2.0, because what better time is there to try to kick off an apocalypse than when the Loki created device is down? During the Crash 2.0, Wednesday, alongside one of the other leaders who we'll talk about here in a second, was captured by a Europol undercover operative. But in true Winter Night fashion, Wednesday committed suicide before he could be interrogated.
That checks out.
The next leader we have is Thursday.
No idea what this one was named after.
No, can't possibly put it together. Thursday, Thorsday. I don't know. Something hammers.
I'm pretty sure it's named after Boulder.
Well, Thursday is a berserker adept and a veteran of the Euro Wars. Thursday coordinated the defense of their base, which was, of course, called Valhalla.
Of course.
And he eventually triggers the nuclear device that destroys the base and kills both attackers and the remaining defenders, thinking that it would kick off their whole end of the world party. Since obviously the fight was already going on, what better way to start it all, you know?
Right. Yeah, we're already popping off anyway.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta get everybody involved. Finally, we have our third Norn. Would you like to take a stab at their name?
Arbor Day.
Arbor Day. No, not Arbor
Dang it.
Day. Sorry.
Friday.
Ah. Nailed it.
Yes. And
Friday.
is Friday Freya? Is that
I believe it's supposed to be Freya. Yeah.
the okay.
Friday was once a Swedish scientist. Friday lost her family and her career in the original, or the first crash of 2029. And she developed an intense hatred for the Matrix. So here's who probably put it out to all the rest of the Winter Night cells of Matrix bad, don't use Matrix.
Understandably so.
This hatred for the Matrix caused her to go looking for spiritual guidance and relief. And this is where she started to dabble in Viking cults. And in 2031, she meets Wednesday and becomes his partner. Friday and Wednesday build off of these Viking cult ideals and create Winter Night together. In the end, she is captured alongside Wednesday, but her magical defenses delayed her interrogation until after the specialized virus that they had been activated. Friday then finally breaks, revealing the existence and purpose of Winter Night's nuclear arsenal. So she finally breaks under pressure after the virus that they have created is released. And by the way, the virus is called Jormungand.
Of course.
Because, duh.
Why would it not be?
And of course, Jormungand is responsible for corrupting most of the worldwide matrix during the crash of 2064. So, second crash, partially Winter Night involvement, tangentially kind of their fault as well. So the actions of Winter Night kind of lead to Crash 2.0 in 2064, and the cult itself ceases to exist in that same year, as all three of the Norns are either captured or killed. So of the three, the only one that is still around would be Friday.
Which, arguably, given her background, is probably the most important one for them to still have around.
Well, being one of the heads and one of the co-founders of Winter Night, yes, that makes sense.
Well, and also just being a scientist and, like, probably actually being the brains behind the operation of the three original leaders to begin with.
Yeah, I would have to say, of the breakdown of the three, Friday is the a little more of the magical and probably the magical and the forward thinker, the brains, right? Thursday is just your general and your beat stick.
Right.
He's the guy that's going out and just punching people in the face.
Yeah.
And then Wednesday is your smooth talker. Also with the idea of bringing about the end and then running into somebody that can help make that ideal come to light. But being able to talk them into building this organization to do it, you've got to have a silvery tongue.
For sure.
One of the other reasons why it was so difficult to track down Winter Knight leadership as well, aside from them operating in cells around the world, is that the headquarters were based in Sweden in an old submarine base. I believe, I don't know for sure, I don't think it says for sure, the submarine base was left over from World War II. And they just repurposed it and used it. And fortunately, after 2064, it's a smoking crater in the ground and irradiated because of the nuclear blast that goes off that destroys it. Woo!
One more for the road, right?
Hey, on the way out, just gonna light this off.
Yeah, don't mind me. I'm just gonna close this on the way.
Just gonna close this door on the way out. No big deal. Oh, and obviously, the god chip that they're referring to is a specialized beetle that the group would use as a form of coercion. You get somebody addicted to it, and then you keep giving them hits of it as long as they keep doing what you want them to do.
Of course.
So that's Winter Night. What do you think?
I mean,
Take your time, collect your thoughts. I'm ready for this.
As I previously stated, I give them credit for probably being the most efficient shadowy organization that we've covered so far in terms of like actually getting the closest to what they were trying to accomplish, you know? I also like the concept of them being a shadowy organization that is constantly at war with every other shadowy organization because they have to stop them from ending the world before they can end the world. That's kind of an interesting concept that I don't think I've ever really seen talked about, like in handling, you know, multiple shadowy organizations in any type of fiction before. Because of course, like obviously one of your other major competitors outside of the obvious people trying to stop you are the other people who are trying to do the same thing you want to do, but via a different way. So that's kind of an interesting conceit just from a lore standpoint in and of itself. I think that that's kind of cool. I think Winter Night's actually really interesting. I think that the dosing people with the god drug beetle for indoctrination is pretty hardcore. So that's rough. You know, all the stuff with the general is pretty brutal.
Well, that was just
But
one example to give to
yeah.
show how they indoctrinate and like the level
Right.
of uh-oh that you're involved in.
Of uh-oh. This is the uh-oh you've stepped in.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
To give you the scope of just how vicious they are.
But to be honest, like, as a shadowy organization, I think that I think they might be kind of high for me now.
Well, you also have to take into account that they are the one shadow organization that we've talked about that can also be removed from the board as they don't exist anymore.
True, true.
They ended in the 2060s and the timeline has progressed into the 2080s. So
They had a hell of a run.
they came the closest.
They absolutely came the closest, without a doubt. So yeah, I mean, I think probably in regards to shadowy organizations, Winter Knight might be my number one for Shadowrun now. I gotta give credit where credit is due. Black Lodge, close second. Just as soon as they can figure out what they're doing. But until we get to that day, yeah, Winter Lodge is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, Winter Night is pretty
Or Winter Night, so
crazy.
Winter Lodge. That's
Winter
wait for the
Lodge.
Winter Lodge. They are coming.
They are coming.
Finally, some guidance in that organization.
Oh my gosh.
What are your feelings on Winter Knight, Easy? How do they rank up for you in regards to shadowy organizations?
Oof. I've liked them when I was first introduced to them back
Hmm.
when I started playing, they were still kind of out and about in the lore. So it was still possible to kind of run across them.
I also like the conceit of them of most of the things that they do is just one person as the fence basically hiring Shadowrunners to do things for them. So being able to use them as an incorporated factor into a Shadowrun campaign is very easy because you could be running a milk run for Winter Night and you don't even know it. Yeah. But in so in the grand scheme of our shadowy organizations, where do they rank for you?
I've got to put them pretty high. They did come really close.
Again, A for effort, man. They saw the finish line.
And if you want to know some more about them as well, they've made appearances in various books. They've been in The Messenger Adventure, The Wake of the Comet, and the Shadowrun novel Ragnarok.
Well, who could have seen that one coming? Do you know, were they in any of the ARPG games?
They were not, no.
Okay. It seems like the only thing that they really that none of the shadowy organizations really got used for any of those, did they? It's mostly
No,
just the
not.
gangs and stuff.
Yeah. They didn't really delve. I mean, other than the first one where you're messing with the Brotherhood, but you know. There's also for the campaign of System Failure, which is basically the end of third edition going into fourth edition. Obviously, Winter Night plays a significant role in that campaign as well.
Does fourth edition start right after the end of the timeline for them?
The official start date for fourth edition, I think, is the mid 2060s. So yeah, that checks out. I don't know the exact date, but I want to say that the 2060s is when fourth edition officially starts.
Doesn't know the exact date. Ladies and gentlemen, we got him. Exposed finally on
Was it?
recorded
Yeah,
tape.
it wasn't a question I was expecting to get asked
Of everything
completely out
that
of nowhere.
could have been brought up tonight, easy, always anticipate.
Seriously.
No, that's fair. Okay. So yeah, then that would make sense that they would play in heavily for that if that's the rollover for the edition as well. Like you said, timeline wise, that adds up, checks out.
Yeah.
But you know, I gotta say, all things considered, although they are crazy Viking evangelicals, all things considered, at the end of the day, at least they're not hyper-racists.
Oh yeah, no, they don't care about that at all. Doesn't even enter into their agenda.
So, you know, in comparison to a lot of other things we've talked about, Easy, I think that's another plus in their book. That's another plus next to their agenda.
Yes.
It's
Gosh.
just nice, okay? It's nice every once in a while to not have to go, oh yeah, and also these guys are hyper-racists.
I suppose, yes, you have that. You don't have to worry about that. They're not hyper-racist. They want to kill everyone equally.
Yeah, see, equal opportunity mass destruction. That's all we're asking for
How about that?
in
Ready
the
to
sixth
just
world. What a
burn everybody down in equal standing.
quaint notion, you know?
Wait. But yeah, I would rate them pretty high. I mean, they almost succeeded in their goals. If you really want to get into it, I highly recommend that your table, anybody that's listening, if you want to get into more of it, you go ahead and play that campaign for the end, which is System Failure. And you'll get to dive into some of the things that are happening. And I think one of the missions that you that the that Shadowrun teams would undertake in there is I think you have to go to a location and try and stop a nuke.
What's the worst that could happen?
I think that's in there. Oh yeah, you know, it blows up and everybody goes, it happens.
At least it gives you a hard out for the campaign. You know, no
It's
meandering,
very true.
no having to try to figure out where do we go from here.
Definitely something to look into. Highly recommend it. You guys will have to let us know what you think about Winter Night. They are definitely the one organization that heavily leans into their theme. Like
Yeah,
they took Norse
on point.
mythology and were like, everything we do
Yeah, on point with
on
the
brand.
yeah, on brand for sure. Message received.
Cannot stop us now. Here we go. But yeah, I don't really have anything else to add for Winter Knight. They were vicious. They were very secretive, very efficient. I mean, to be able to collect nuclear material, that's gotta you gotta be hush hush about that, because corporations definitely don't want other people to have it.
Yeah, if you're gonna launch a nuke, it better be Ares branded, damn it.
Ares brand nukes, ladies and gentlemen.
When you
When you
need to make a
absolutely
statement, make it with Ares.
Tell him Ares sent you. You need to send your enemies directly to the gates of hell. Tell him Ares sent you. Oh man, there's some marketing and commercials that we'll need to look into making. Right there. Well, you guys, I hope you have enjoyed hearing some more about the Winter Knight organization. I have had a fun time bringing it to you. I am also a fan of Norse mythology, so it's like two things in one for me here, really. Austin, I'm also proud that you can appreciate the Norse mythology as well. Thank you for making some of
Woo.
those references more readily available to people.
Yeah, I did say it as a joke to begin with, but honestly, when I was going to college, I was actually understudying for mythology as my secondary. So I have always had a big connection to mythology. The two most that I probably know is Greek and Norse. So anytime that we can talk Norse mythology, I am down for it.
Awesome. You and me both. I am on board. Let's do this.
Bringing back Winter Knight right here. You heard it first, ladies and
No,
gentlemen. Here we go. I call
no.
Thursday.
Nope.
Easy will now only refer to Big Daddy Wednesday from now on. So please address him appropriately.
Nope. Not doing it.
Big
No,
Papa Wednesday? Do you prefer Big Papa
look,
Wednesday? That's fair. It's got a better ring to it.
I'm not losing one of my eyes and hanging myself on a tree for so many days to receive ultimate knowledge. I don't want to do it.
Not again.
Not again.
Once was enough, okay? Didn't even work the first time.
All right, you guys,
Although, I
that's
don't know, man. You have a pretty systemic amount of knowledge on Shadowrun, so maybe that is how we got here in the first place.
all right, we're definitely going
The
to
Deep
hurry up
Lord.
and get to the end of the podcast here so that people can't make any kind of correlations or draw any conclusions from what my co-host happens to be saying here. It didn't happen. It's not real. I don't know where Yggdrasil is. Don't ask me.
You know, I've never seen Easy and Odin in the same place at the same time before, is all I'm trying to say.
Okay, again, there aren't a bunch of ravens that happen to fly around my house. I don't know what you're talking about. It's a conspiracy. Don't read too much into it, everybody. I promise. I don't know what's coming. Anyway, if you enjoy the lore that you're receiving from us, come on over to the Discord. Have a talk with us about it. We love to interact with our listeners. I will get to you as soon as I can with whatever questions you come to ask us, or that you want to talk about, or interesting lore tidbits that you have found that you would like to share, or maybe influence us to talk about them on the podcast. Who knows? It could happen. But with all that, you guys, thank you. As always, and you know, we will catch you on the next one.
The Topps Company, Inc. has sole ownership of the names, logo, artwork, marks, photographs, sound, audio, video, and or any proprietary materials used in connection with the game Shadowrun. The Topps Company, Inc. has granted permission to Critical Hits to use such names, logos, artwork, photographs, sound, audio, video, and or any proprietary materials for promotional and informational purposes on its website, but does not endorse and is not affiliated with Critical Hits in any official capacity whatsoever.